always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach, Goldberg and Ramil. Talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news. Got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. Seat geek for the cheap. What's the day got the heat?
And now, your locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil, and we are here recapping the Miami Heat's 97-91 win over the Chicago Bulls. It closes out the Heat's six-game homestand. They close it out at a 3-3 record. It was a win over one of the worst teams in the NBA in the Chicago Bulls. A couple things. It was Hassan Whiteside's return to the rotation after several games sidelined with a knee injury, but James Johnson was out. Okero White starts in his place. And it was a relatively close game. Miami got out to a 27-17 lead after the first quarter. The Bulls rally back, outscore the Heat 30-22 in the second quarter. Pretty close at halftime, pretty close throughout the third quarter. And it looked like, for a second there, the Heat were going to have another one of their bad third quarters. Yep. They were actually entering the game the worst team in the league in the third quarter. They've been outscored 27.7 points per 100 possessions in the third quarter. Dead last in the NBA entering this game. It looked like that was going to be the case again. However, the Heat climbed back into it. They kind of flip the script on it, and they go on a 32-12 run between the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and end up kind of just blowing the game open. Chicago kind of made it close in garbage time, but really this game was somewhat decided a little late, even though it was a little too close for comfort for two and a half quarters.
It's a positive in the sense that it's a win, but it's the Chicago Bulls, who have won one game this season. Have mostly a G League roster.
Actively trying to lose.
Yeah, I mean, they actually showed a lot of heart and effort. You know, it was a solid performance from Chicago, to be honest with you. I think they played probably as well as they possibly could. They've got a pretty good center in Rob Lopez. Robin Lopez, who's putting up career numbers. Thank you, Eric Reed. Lauri Markkanen, their rookie, is doing very well. Miami looks nice in some stretches, but there is definitely a concerning trend, at least for me, as far as how they handled that kind of adversity when Chris Dunn was inserted to the game. Chris Dunn, who's in his second game this season after a pretty inconsistent, horrific rookie season, went in there, made an immediate impact, particularly defensively, blocked three shots within a matter of a few minutes, packed Justice Winslow at the rim. That kind of stuff shouldn't be happening. Miami just kind of collapsed a little bit under their weight of their expectations. And I think a lot of Heat Twitter was expecting them to go 2-5 to start the season. I didn't expect them to pull out a victory. I'm pleasantly surprised that they did, but that shouldn't have been a concern, to be honest with you.
You mentioned Dunn and Grant as well. They both had really good defense against Goran Dragic in particular. Dragic, it seemed like, had a hard time getting to his spot, getting his shots. I think it was Dunn's and Grant's length and their overall strength and athleticism that kind of hurt Dragic. Dragic led the Heat in scoring with 20 points, but that was, to me, one of the most fraudulent team highs I've seen all season. He didn't have a great game. He really wasn't even in the game. Spoelstra didn't play him towards the end. I didn't think he played really well. He scored 20 points, but it took him 17 shots to do it. But moreover, I thought that the Heat, yeah, you're right, there's positives and negatives. They should have probably blown the doors off of this team. It was a little too close for too long, and I can get that. But the Heat were also struggling entering this game. I think at this point you just take the win. The homestand obviously hasn't gone how you liked so far. So at this you look at the corrections, and there are some things that the Heat have been getting right in the last couple games. And tonight, what really stood out to me, only 11 turnovers. Spoelstra has said he only wanted between 12 and 14. This is 11. That's really good for where this team was coming in, one of the worst teams in the league as far as turning the ball over.
They still look sloppy, though. I mean, I feel like maybe they didn't turn the ball over as much, but there were moments there where they were definitely overpassing the ball. You made a great observation on Twitter about how Goran Dragic passed up a great shot for a good one. He wound up taking a bulky mid-range jumper kind of off balance as opposed to a wide-open shot. But it, not just an individual performance like that, but on other occasions where they were just swinging the ball constantly looking for a big shot. It's like, at some point you have to be aggressive and confident and hope that your three-point shot will fall. Unfortunately, another poor shooting night overall for Miami, only 97 points against arguably the worst defense in the league. We've been black and white about this. You've been very positive. I have not. I'm concerned, to be honest with you, and the 6-game road trip isn't going to help the matter any.
Maybe I'm trying to put a happy face on this whole thing. I still think that, 3-3 on this homestand, there was only really one bad loss, and that was the Minnesota game. And Minnesota's better. Their best five is better than Miami's best five, especially
without Whiteside.
Especially when they hear without Whiteside. And I'm starting to feel like this team, for all the chemistry and the continuity that we kind of preached and talked about going into the season, I don't know if we necessarily took into account enough how all these guys now are on big contracts. And I don't think it's a bad. I don't think they're relaxing because they have big contracts, but I think just individually, guys like James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, Deion Waiters, they're trying to live up to the contracts. They're almost doing too much, it feels like sometimes. And now all of a sudden they're not playing the role player, where this team was such a good collection of role players. They're not playing like that anymore, just because now it feels like they all have to be sort of the centerpiece of the team. Really quick, fantasy basketball fans, listen up. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite fantasy app. It's called Draft. It's a daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like those other guys. Draft was launched in 2014 with the idea that the draft is the best part of playing fantasy sports. The only problem, though, is that you can only get to the draft once in your season-long leagues, and traditionally, daily fantasy is dominated by sharks who can be intimidating, not with Draft. On Draft, you play with a live snake draft. There's no salary cap with other people. Plus, there's no multi-entry or player overlap, so you don't have to worry about those fantasy sharks gaming the system. Draft is designed to make your fantasy sports simple, fair, and fun. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night. Pick a draft and begin. Drafts start every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now. Here's my favorite part. After the draft, there's little to no lineup management. Just set it and forget it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. And of course, you could play for cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everybody. Again, no salary cap, live snake drafts, no losses because you forgot to make a sub for an injured player, and no fantasy sports sharks. Draft leans into the best part of fantasy sports, and you can play whenever you want. Join Draft today. Download the app. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes, or play right from your computer on draft.com. For a limited time, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. Just use the promo code LOHEAT and play a game for free to win real money. All you got to do is use the promo code LOHEAT on your first deposit. All right. Let's get some Twitter comments. Yep. What do you think?
I was going to say, you made a good point about the contract and the possible weight of that, Last year, although they were playing for a contract, they were kind of free and easy, right? There were no expectations on that team. Nobody looked at that roster in the offseason and said, oh, that's a playoff contender for sure. So there were little expectations out of that roster. But I think this year there's the expectation of at least the postseason, if not maybe even home court advantage, although that seems very unrealistic at this point. And of course,
let's take the example of just James Johnson, for example. Like last year, he comes in the league, he's almost out of the league. He comes into the Heat. His main task was just to get into shape, right? And he does that. And he's on a minimum contract, basically. And they're just like, okay, hit some threes from the corner and occasionally just take guys off the dribble and make a play with the ball in your hands. And that's all he had to do. Now he enters this season having done that, kind of outperforming expectations both offensively and defensively. And now they say, okay, here's a bunch of money. You're also the team captain now, so do that now. And and be as good, if not better, than you were last year, which was a career year for him. Right. I mean, that's hard, right? And then, but what he was so good about James Johnson was how he seamlessly fit into what the Heat were doing last year. And now it's like, okay, you've got Dragic, who signed a big contract 2 years ago. Whiteside, same thing 2 years ago. So now all these guys are like between Dragic and Waiters and Whiteside, James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, of course, with that huge deal. All these guys are coming in, and they've got to just do. Maybe they feel like they just have to do more, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's get to some Twitter stuff. First one comes from Taylor Monk. He says, "A win is a win, but ugly. Nothing's changed for me. I'm still very concerned about this team's consistency." Taylor sends that to us using the hashtag AskLOHeat. So very much in line with what you're thinking, David. A win's a win, and that's good. That's positive, but it was ugly, and that's concerning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I can't shake the fact that this is against a really poor opponent, and that they had to come back and have a dominant performance in the third quarter from role players there just to make it to that next level. You know, obviously Whiteside is easing into play there, but he still played 26 minutes. He had 13 points, finished with a huge rebounding night, 14, most of which came early in the first quarter, though. Did you notice that at first, like, Miami didn't score their first basket until, what, was like 4 minutes already into the game or something like that? It felt like they were very slow to score. They looked like they were trying to get Whiteside going very early on, almost forcing the issue a little bit, trying to get him more comfortable. And then, although they were able to bounce back from that and kind of get into a good rhythm against Chicago, again, most of if they were doing anything positive, I can't help but say, well, you know what? It's because they were playing against a very bad opponent. If they're playing a good team, these kinds of things aren't going to happen. They may have looked good.
They had a 78-68 lead in the fourth quarter with like 6 minutes left. Did you ever really feel like they were going to lose this game at some point in the fourth quarter? Like, if you did, tell me. I didn't. I've been problematically optimistic so far this season.
All it takes is one big shot, and then next thing you know, they kind of the wheels could fall off there. I didn't expect Chicago to mount a comeback, but it shouldn't have gone to this point. It seems like we're doing the same thing we did at the start of last season when we're making excuses for this team and saying, "Well, there's gritty effort there." Gritty effort doesn't get you, you know, anything. It's about performance on a nightly basis. Something needs to click, and soon, or else you're going to find yourself with, you know, a losing record or very early on, even, you know, a deeper hole than you already have right now. And the playoffs may not be a realistic possibility by February.
I get the sense that most of our listeners are more in line with you. They're concerned. And just based on our mailbags and our comments after games and just Heat Twitter in general.
Yeah.
If any of our listeners are optimistic like me, please reach out. Because I feel like I'm on an island right now.
Not Waiters Island.
I'm on Waiters Island by myself. It's me and Dion just being like, everything will be fine. We just got to get more foul calls. all right, next one comes from Chris using the hashtag AskLOHeat. He says, "Is Eric Spoelstra testing these guys to see if they could figure it out?" Now, this came at the end of the game where Eric Spoelstra had out there Tyler Johnson, Dion Waiters, Wayne Ellington, Justice Winslow, and Bam Adebayo. Now, you mentioned Whiteside was coming back, only played 26 minutes instead of the 36 that he played in his first game. He was on a minutes, not a restriction, but a minutes watch, I think is a good way to put it. And so he rolled out there with guys like Bam and Wayne Ellington and guys and even Tyler, who's not always in the game at the end, without Goran Dragic, who didn't have his most effective game. It wasn't the most efficient.
He looked gassed out there.
He did. So I thought that might be what Eric Spoelstra was doing. Maybe Spoelstra was like me, and he was like, we're not going to lose to Chicago. I don't care how close it is. But I also thought that those guys deserved to be out there. They were playing well. Bam's defense in particular, and we'll get to him a little bit later, was really good. Justice Winslow was doing a lot of those quote-unquote winning plays that Spoelstra looks for. He was finishing pretty well near the rim as well. I thought that they earned to be on the floor towards the end there. What did you think?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. They were playing more effectively than any other lineup had, except for that brief stint in the first quarter where Miami built their lead. I mean, you couldn't have put anybody else. Again, you're going to put in an exhausted Dragic. James Johnson wasn't available. Whiteside, as Eric Reed pointed out, once he cooled off, you can't bring him back in there, or else you risk aggravating the injury before they go on his road trip. Josh Richardson, ever since we recorded that podcast, lauding his incredible start to the season, he's been in the shitter ever since, to be honest with you. He's been really struggling. 22 minutes, yeah. 1 of 7, just 3 points. So there weren't many other options. So why not go out there with a team that's the unit that's playing best? It was a good complementary balance, I think. Adebayo in particular looked great defensively. And Tyler was doing some nice things offensively. So it was a good group. You want to see them, work cohesively out there. And I think for the rest of the season, again, against a team like Chicago, it's probably good enough to hold on to the lead. You want to see them build some chemistry so that you can feel this rotation later on at some point, and hopefully they'll produce as equally well as they did tonight.
Last Twitter comment comes from Billy using the hashtag AskLOHeat. So I think O'Carroll White should be shooting more of those top of the arc threes, don't you? And I kind of want to use this question to sort of, yes, and also launch into a little bit more of a larger conversation about O'Carroll White, who started the game. James Johnson didn't play tonight. But so O'Carroll White gets the start. That allows Kelly Olynyk to still come off the bench. As we know, Spoelstra likes to maintain rotation integrity as much as he can. So he starts O'Carroll White.
Rotation integrity. I haven't heard that one before, but I like that turn of phrase. Has he used it? Yes.
That's
Has
me.
He used
I
that
just,
one? Or,
I just oh, came,
you
up,
came
with
up with him
just now. Ooh. That was good.
Fire. Yeah, rotation integrity. I like it.
Rotation integrity. All right.
It sounds like something Spoelstra, the birthday boy. Oh, congrats to Eric Spoelstra,
yes,
who undoubtedly listens to this. Happy birthday and congrats on the upcoming birth of his first son.
Absolutely. Welcome on the show anytime to discuss it. the heat, parenting, anything. kind of threw me off there. Oh, so Carol White walks in, has a nice... has an effective game, plays pretty well. He's the kind of player who doesn't need the ball, where we were just talking about James Johnson. He sort of has to have the ball, and he's been kind of doing a little too much with it. O'Carroll White's the opposite. O'Carroll White's almost like what James Johnson was last year, where it's just like, yeah, whatever you do is just gravy, man. Like, we don't really expect anything. I'm wondering, does O'Carroll White, now the Heat lost Rodney Magruder right before the season. They don't play the same position, obviously, but White, does he have like a Rodney Magruder type of effect on this offense, as far as just a guy who could stand in the corner or stand to be on the arc and just kind of space the floor a little bit, make some three-pointers and catch-and-shoot situations, grab a rebound here and there, and that's it.
I see that. I could definitely see that kind of impact. I think there was a comment, I can't recall which beat reporter posted it, but something that Dion had mentioned about missing Rodney Magruder on the floor because of those... his back cuts, that it frees up the offense the way that he's not exactly, as you pointed out, he's not demanding the ball, but he moves around. He's just trying to create spacing and opportunities there for a free-flowing offense. And I saw a lot of that with White as well. A guy who's not going to demand the ball just has to move around without it, and that creates some opportunities for players there, for whoever's handling the ball at that particular time. So I could definitely see a lot of those similarities. And with his added length, he's a plus rebounder too, a guy who can probably grab a board and create another shot opportunity there, a second chance shot opportunity. So I could definitely see that kind of impact. That, as far as our Twitter question, that one three-pointer, he went 1 of 3 overall, but the one he connected on, it was a little different in that he caught it on the hop, and it just looked so smooth when he went up. I knew it was going down as soon as he caught it because the way he shot it just looks so much in rhythm, something that I'm not used to seeing from a guy like O'Carroll. But I think he was trying to force it a little bit after when he took two more shots after that. Unfortunately, those didn't fall. But, if he can catch it on the hop in rhythm like that, I can't see why we wouldn't want him to provide a little bit of additional spacing.
He's a good three-point shooter.
Sure. And like Rodney, maybe that can continue to develop. I mean, maybe he seems like a decent shooter based on low shot attempts, but I mean, if he gets more as the season progresses, if he gets some consistent playing time, sure, why not see him trying to develop that?
He's got a nice base, a nice stroke, White does. He made 37.5% of 64 threes in his final season in college, and he made 34% on 144 attempts in his final two seasons. Not like college distance, keep in mind, right, but for a guy of his position, that's not bad. 35.3% on 34 attempts as a rookie, small sample size, but over the last 3 years, he's shooting anywhere between 34 and 37.5% from three-point range. And you just kind of put all that together, and that's a pretty substantial sample size. And he looks good shooting it, like you said. Yeah. All right. Quick reminder, if you haven't done so already, if you could just take a moment when you're done listening to this and leave a 5-star rating and a review for our show, Locked On Heat, on iTunes, it'd be appreciated. It helps others discover the show, and it just makes us look better. So we'd appreciate it. Haven't had a review in quite a long time. Spotlight player time. Let's do it. Mine is Bam Adebayo. And that's for the simple reason of, look, this guy played 13 minutes tonight. Only had 4 points. Only had 4 rebounds. Had 2 steals. That was pretty nice. It was only 1 of 2 shooting. The one shot he made was a dunk. So
every shot he's made is a dunk.
Yes, every shot. All 10 shots he's made this season has been a dunk. But defensively, he was really impressive. Active. Very active. Cooper Moorhead tweeted out a video, actually, of just how much ground he covered on a second-half possession where he's darting between 3 guys defensively, just covering a lot of ground, making it hard for Chicago's ball handlers to really do anything, to get around a screen or to even you know, pass the ball into the post or anything. He's just, his feet are so quick. He is so active. He tries really hard, and he's got this tremendous length and athleticism. And one thing that I noticed on that one, was it when Robin Lopez got the ball at the sort of the top of the key area?
Yeah, snatched it from him.
And he just snatched it from him. He's just got this athleticism that kind of just, you don't, you know, I think Heat fans understand it because we've been kind of hyping him up for a little bit. But if you're Chicago, you're like, whoa, where did that come from? I didn't know he could do that. He doesn't bite on pump fakes, which is really nice. He seems like he's got really good instincts and he's got really quick feet. And you combine those two things, and yeah, he's going to make a bunch of mistakes. He's probably going to be a net negative because he's a rookie, even though today he was a net positive, +8 on the box score. But those flashes, he's got a really good feel for the game, and that combined with that athleticism, I'm really high on Bam Adebayo, and I thought this was probably his best defensive effort, at least, of his you know, short career so far.
I agree. I mean, in those 13 minutes, probably wouldn't have gone any playing time if not for Kelly Olynyk getting into bad foul trouble. He picked up 5 fouls. I don't remember. He only played 9 minutes, and he picked up 5 fouls. Yeah. That was, he was definitely foul plague tonight. So Adebayo comes in there after Whiteside's already been sitting on the bench. You don't want to put him back into a game. You're kind of dry there as far as the rotation with James Johnson sitting out as well. You look to the bench and go, oh, well, time to throw the rookie in there against a guy like Rolo, who is a bit of a bruiser, you know, a legit 7-footer, known for some pretty sharp elbows. He can clear some space there when he's grabbing rebounds. Adebayo held his own and then some. And you're right as far as covering that space there. He seems really smooth.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that he'll have the confidence either later in the season or in his future just to do more offensively, because I found him again open a couple of times with the ball in his hands, and we've seen him put up the shot at summer league or in pre-draft workouts. He needs to have the confidence to just let it fly. Unfortunately, just doesn't have it right now. Or maybe he's been told not to shoot it. I don't see that's the case, but he looks like he's trying to, he doesn't want to force a shot there. But from 15, 18 feet, if you've got the ball in your hand, you're standing there in the elbow with the ball in your hand, just hoist it. I mean, especially if you're wide open, which he was. But yeah. Defensively, absolutely, he looks really, really good. Reminds me a little bit of Winslow in the fact that he can he moves his feet very well, stays low, keeps the body going, and then if the shot goes up, has some incredible athleticism to just snatch the rebound off the rim there. I mean, that was evident on all 4 of his boards today. He looks really, really good. I'm hoping he'll get more playing time in the future. Although, I mean, if Okoro keeps making a case for himself, Olynyk continues to shoot the way he does, it's going to be hard to balance that out.
Yeah, and this was a game without James Johnson, right? And so he's going to get those minutes too. I mean, I was watching him defensively, and I got to admit, I'm not gonna elaborate. We'll get to your spotlight player, but I had some thoughts. And I think you know what I was thinking. Does that make sense?
Sure.
As far as what this guy's future could be and what it means for this roster.
As far as Adebayo is concerned?
Yeah. I had some bad thoughts. I had some thoughts that would piss off a lot of our listeners.
I want to hear it now.
How long, like really how long until he's a better defender than Hassan Whiteside for today's NBA? Like, what Whiteside does as far as rim protection is up there with Rudy Gobert. And I don't want to understate the value of that. However,
he's more like Draymond Green as far as that versatility.
Bam is. And yes. I don't know, man. The way he's able to come out against screens.
Yeah.
Is that okay. if you look at what the future of this team is and the future of the league is, I don't know. And how much longer until he's better defensively? I didn't think he'd be this good now. I didn't think he'd be this good.
It's going to have to take a change in the roster construction and in the way they play defense, because I think the current structure of our defense isn't going to work with anybody other than Whiteside. We saw that in those games that he was missing. So I'm not going to, as critical as we've been of Hassan in the past, although, again, tough love, I think I recognize over the last few games how much of an impact he had. A lot of his production defensively can just be looked at whatever blocks he has, although there's other impacts there as well.
Whiteside. There was a couple times where the Chicago's young guards, and they're young, so I guess maybe this is somewhat expected, but they'd start going to the lane. Whiteside would take a step towards them, and they just pass the ball. Like, people are scared of Whiteside, and that's not something that Bam has right now. Why I asked, how much longer?
And conversely, there were other times where a backcourt player, either Dion or Tyler or anybody, got beat, and he had to help out, and then that freed an open shot at the rim there. It happened a couple of times with Markkanen and with Lopez. So I don't know. I don't know that he'll ever be a better defender than Whiteside, to be honest with you.
I don't think he'll ever be the same defender as Whiteside.
Definitely not. He'll need to get so much more playing time, and that's just not – that doesn't seem realistic with this roster as currently constructed. Unless Miami loses really badly over the next couple of months and it's time for Pat Riley to clear house, I just don't see Adebayo getting the kind of playing time where we could say, damn, this guy could be a defensive stopper, our main presence defensively.
So who's your spotlight player?
For me, it was Tyler Johnson. You know, I think as much as he struggled over the course of the season, tonight was probably his best game of the year, 19 points. 5 of 12 shooting, 3 of 5 from three-point range, 6 of 6 from free throws, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal. Good overall game for Tyler. Really desperately needed. As far as what I could see is that he was just knocking down those shots at a time when Miami really needed some kind of an offense, you know, because they were stuck for whatever reason beneath, you know, Chicago's massive, incredible defensive presence. They just couldn't get a shot off, but Tyler was there and he produced at a very high level. So, I mean, to me, he was the guy who kind of kept the ship afloat there in that third and fourth quarter when they needed him most.
Big boost in that third quarter. He was 6 of 6 from the free throw line. That's good to see, especially for this team. Yeah, I thought Tyler did what we need Tyler Johnson to do, right? Is just come in when we need some scoring. We're going to ask you to do it. You know, if the rest of the team is kind of, if Josh Richardson, for example, had a good game, if Goran Dragic was more efficient, if Deion Waiters was more efficient, they probably don't need Tyler Johnson to do that. And you can ask him at that point, hey, just come in, facilitate, get the offense going a little bit. But today was one of those games, and this is why Tyler Johnson coming off the bench is so valuable and why he actually prefers it, is like, okay, no, we need you to actually go out and score and get points because our offense is a little bit of a rut right now at the start of the third quarter. He came in and did that. And like you said, kind of gave them the boost that they needed and opened up the game for Miami there. All right, up next, the Heat start their six-game road trip. They play at the Nuggets on Friday. That game is going to be at 9 p.m. Eastern time, so a late start because it's a Western road trip, so people stay up late, right?
And then a couple other games over the course of the weekend. It's going to change our scheduling around a little bit because they've got a game on Sunday and then on Monday against the world champion Golden State Warriors, so that should be an interesting one.
Yeah, so quick look ahead at this road trip. I think the only win that maybe we could pencil in, you never know with this team, is Phoenix. Everything else is going to be pretty tough. I mean, the good thing is that Monday night game, right? Sunday is against the Clippers, Monday is against the Warriors. Usually you'll look at a game against the Warriors and be like, all right, that's probably a loss. And usually when you're looking at your calendar, you look at the second game of a back-to-back and you'll say, okay, that's a loss. It's kind of like you're, instead of getting two losses, you're only getting one. Maybe that's just me continually being an optimist. And I don't even know if that made any sense. But instead of two losses, you get one loss. I thought that was okay. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions for next week to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Tweet your comments and questions for our recaps like tonight using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Make sure to subscribe to the show to get podcasts automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Yeah, it was.